Connor Dixon with Endscreen Media, and I'm speaking with Steve Harnsberger, who is founder and CEO of Universal Search and Discovery. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks very much, Colin. Pleasure to be here.
So we're here to talk about one of my favorite subjects in the universe, which is discovery and some of the challenges around that in the streaming TV environment. But before we get to that, Steve, maybe this is a great opportunity for you to introduce your company, Universal Search. So tell us a little bit about where did the company come from and what are you up to?
So actually, yeah, it's a great story. We were I was working for Guidebox, a company Jeremy Riney founded with Kai Schneider, and we had aggregated OTT streaming data from 350 different streaming websites where you crawl them like Google does, and built an API of data that we were licensing. Where can I watch it? Solving the consumer problem of I don't know which app the episode or film is in. And I went to Roku to say, hey, we've got this API you could license in 2015-16. And they're like, well, we already have Grace Note and not sure we need all this streaming data, but you're really good at managing all these feeds. You've got 350 different feeds that you've aggregated and normalized in your engine. How about you help us? We have a problem. And we're like, well, what's your problem? They said, well, we're trying to onboard apps to search. And it's a different process that we've only got six or seven of them in search. When you're searching on Roku, you were only looking at Netflix and Hulu and several others, and no one else had, had gone into their search engine. So they hired us as part of their Search 100 project to onboard, and they introduced us to TBS and CBS and Bloomberg and the brand name of major apps. And we took their data and onboarded it into Roku so that they had a sort of a base level, a foundation level that you were now searching across 100 apps out of 5,000. So search became more usable and more user-friendly. Still only a minority of the apps. And we liked it so much, we decided to create a company out of it because the same problem existed at Apple and Amazon and Google and Samsung. They had a proprietary onboarding spec. They needed a specialty feed. And that's what we were doing. And we ended up spinning the company out when Real Good bought Guidebox. That's how Universal Search and Discovery was founded. The CTO of Guidebox, Brian Seitel, is the co-founder, and he runs the software code team.
So you're really there to help with a very important tool in modern internet television. And that is these unified search functions that you find on all of the major TV platforms now. I'm thinking of Samsung Tizen, Roku, Siri on Apple devices, et cetera, Amazon Alexa, of course. So all of these are helping consumers find content, and they are all different, right? So that's one of the things that you're helping the AVOD and SVOD providers with, right? Manage their entrance onto all of these different unified search platforms.
Exactly. I think the problem with universal search is lack of awareness from the apps. What is it? Does it exist? It doesn't conjure up something when you say universal search. It's also not universal. It's a minority, not a majority of the apps. We call it data onboarding because really you're reconfiguring your metadata to meet a certain proprietary spec that's completely different for Amazon, Apple, Google, Roku, Vizio, Samsung. And that requires sort of app feed expertise, which is a certain kind of software engineering that and app development code people are different from feed development people. So it's an area of an expertise it's sort of an artificial wall that each of the platforms unintentionally built because their search algorithms can only read code that is formatted in a way that string Alexa can find you. The second point here is that during this period of 2016 to 21, voice has emerged as a tremendous accelerator of people's behavior to try to find content, and also on mobile. You know, maybe it's the device you have, Alexa, in the background, but really, how are people searching for content? Are they going to a mobile phone and just saying, hey, Alexa, or hey, Siri? I would say that we heard data that the voice search increased the volume of film and TV search 20 times in 1 year. in one single year.
That's a really critical aspect of this, right? And it's not just, it's like not just once and done. This is something that you have to have a connector, a feed, right? That's right. Constantly updating all of the services with new shows and new descriptions.
Yes. They update every time you add something new to your library. It automatically updates in our system. We have an engine that manages the feeds. And so four times a day, we're taking an update and we're sending a new feed to each of the platforms. The onboarding process is also, once you get them up, search is consistent. It's continuous. So if you look at it, it's like you have an ad every day when someone self-professes, I'm looking for Midnight in Paris. And you have that, your app logo shows up just the way if someone were to Google search Converse red high top tennis shoes and you'd pop up a picture of a tennis shoe. So it's really, search is really content advertising with an app logo and a deep link to install or stream this content on my app. That's why the name Universal Search doesn't describe, it's really a marketing tool that has been engineered for, using data science.
Yeah, well, somebody once told me, Steve, that people were thinking about their content in the wrong way. They should be thinking about it with universal search, particularly. They should be thinking about it as every piece of content is an entry point into their service. That's a really important point, right? That with universal search, if you can be found, it's an entree directly into your service.
I think that's actually a perfect way to summarize it, because the content... Well, who was it? Levinson from Tubi. He was saying content is king, but discovery is everything. That's what he said. Because even if he's Tubi, but they can't find Tubi, discovery is the only thing. And the entrance, people didn't even know who Vudu was 2 years ago. And Vudu is a major player in transactional. And I'd be willing to bet many people don't know what Tubi is or Pluto. But when they're looking for Hogan's Heroes, or whatever it is, they know the title. Or another, let's look at the use case. I like Nicole Kidman. I go on Rotten Tomatoes. I want to see all of her movies, right? So I want to see if there's one that's highly rated. I say, oh, Nicole Kidman, she played in this one with Tom Cruise, but I don't know where it is. So I go on to Roku search, or I ask Siri, and I say, play this latest film. That's how I get to the app that has that license. I didn't know that IndieFlix had licensed that title or film, freefilm.com. I have no idea where content lives. So that's your point. It's perfect. People know titles. They don't know apps.
Right. So tell us, how powerful are these universal search engines? If I'm not in them and then suddenly I get in them, how big an impact can that have?
Well, first of all, I mean, somebody asked me, well, what do you think, how important is search? And my response to that is, it's the number one thing you should do if you haven't done it in 2021. It is the lowest cost way to drive a subscriber acquisition, grow your app installs, and increase your streaming minutes, which presumably is what every app wants to do. Because once you do it, the amount of searches are not revealed by Siri's owners or Alexa's owners or even Roku's owners, because they're concerned that data really drives their business in their own. They decide from Roku, what do I license for the Roku channel? Because they know what people are looking for. We did a pilot program last year where we onboarded multiple apps to Roku search. And because we don't know what goes on inside the engine, we can look at the delta change after search goes live. So we looked at app installs, streaming minutes, and play counts. Those are the three data points we collected. And we were able to see with Reverie. Reverie is a LGBT AVOD, SVOD hybrid out of LA. And we saw they're running on Bright Cove, and we integrated with Bright Cove. And in 30 days, they saw a 500% increase in new app installs. In 30 days. And that's consistent, by the way. Again, once you hook search up, it doesn't stop. That's, it also, you can't like say, can I give you double the money and can I double my search results? No, it's not like a paid ad where you can spend $5,000 and then $10,000. Search with your library, it's going to be related to what's in your library, what's the size of your library, what genre are you in, are you ad supported versus subscription? That's also a big differential, because an ad-supported app has no friction. Somebody searches, and it's Train to Busan on Dark Matter. You just click install and play, and in 1 minute, you're playing.
Away you go.
There's no credit card. They ask for a credit card, and we're doing one right now with an SVOD test, because you assume you're only going to get 3% signups on an SVOD app, right? So search will actually deliver somebody who says, I'm looking for Train to Busan on a paid app, you know, subscription. But when they come to it, they're going to say, sign up for my 7-day free trial, give me your credit card, and then I'll let you watch it for free. So search delivers 1,000 prospects, and you have to convert, you know, 20 of them and get them to sign up. So SVOD search is still as effective, but it's cost per subscriber prospect rather than cost per install that you're really looking at for an SVOD app. But I would say actually search is even more important for an SVOD app. This one app on was in search on Amazon and was not in search on Roku. And I won't say the name, but they had literally thousands and thousands of subscribers on Amazon. Let's say 10,000. And on Roku, they had 10%. They had 1,000. And they couldn't understand why their subscription app was doing so poorly on Roku. And they thought, well, Amazon has their credit card and they're buying things on Amazon and Roku is free. And I said, guys, look, this was an Amazon channel, what they were talking about. Amazon had built it. Therefore, the data was configured that Alexa could find it. So the only difference in 10,000 versus 1,000 subscribers, I would surmise, was they were in search on Amazon and they weren't in search on Roku.
Wow, that's a great illustration of the power. There's another hidden thing here. One of the things that you mentioned as you were talking about was that the universal searches, they really aren't. They really only cover that top 100 or so of services. This is a huge problem, right? If you're not in that 100, can you still get on the platforms? And what does it mean if you can't?
Well, I think you're right. First of all, Apple publishes a list of who's in Apple TV. And by the way, if you do get into Apple TV, you are also into Siri and you're on mobile. So you're on iOS and Apple and Siri when you put a feed in. So you're in the Apple ecosystem. And 100 apps is such a microcosm. It's not representative of the industry. It means anyone that is a startup or an innovator or has a genre app, they actually are being, they can get in Roku because Roku search is wide open. But some of the other platforms, they just don't have enough resources because it's data heavy and technology heavy. So the smaller apps and the medium-sized apps are not being able to get in to have Alexa recognize them or to have Siri recognize them or have Google Voice, simply because there's only, you have to have sort of a special position in the industry, being in the very top A-plus tier. So what this means is if you can't get discovered by Alexa, you know, your app doesn't exist. If someone says Train to Busan and that's in your library and you're not, and Alexa can't find you. So you're not present. You don't exist. Your app doesn't exist. Hopefully this is going to change over time, but I think we've seen this sort of restricted ecosystem has been going on for several years because the process is resource heavy and it takes a long time. It takes a year sometimes to complete an onboarding project for Apple, for example.
It could take, wow, a whole year?
Yeah, well, Apple is iTunes and they pay attention to all the details. You know, they want if it's on an iPhone and it's in the Apple TV, this is the first time that they didn't build the video system if they're taking a feed from an app. So they want to, they make sure that the images are right and everything's good. And there's a lot of back and forth in engineering that can take a certain amount of time. You know,
is that typical, or does it take that long to get on Roku Universal Search?
No, I think I would say Roku is very streamlined by comparison and open. So it's kind of the Wild West. Roku allows everyone in. You don't have to ask, and you can get live in 30 days on Roku. I would say 6 months is more like it for most of the others. And a lot of the delays are related to things that are technical problems that are hard to solve, like the deep link schema is wrong. And who knows the right deep link schema? It's a very simple question, but it's surprising how hard it is to get the right answer, because there's only a few people that understand deep link schemas, and they're all different, by the way. And the deep link actually makes the app and the video play. So one comma in the wrong space, one capital instead of a lowercase, breaks a deep link. So that's one area that we've had to become really focused on, to understand how deep linking works in these closed ecosystems, because it's the handshake between a search feed and the app software code.
So that's one of the things that you provide there at USAND, right? You provide a sort of independent metadata so that people can fill that out, and then they know that their content will be correctly delivered to Roku and Amazon, etc.
Well, really, what it's a little different than that. We onboard their metadata into a normalization engine. So actually, we built integrations into many of the leading app platforms, Brightcove CMS, Brightcove Cloud, Zype has a CMS, Kaltura, who else? Vimeo, Dot Studio Pro. All of these, we have to onboard all of the data, title, actor, duration, release year, rating, and then we normalize that. Then we actually reconfigure it to meet the JSON spec platform one, right? So that's how it's done.
And so you're sort of like a metadata middleware layer.
Well said. No, exactly. We're basically, we used to say one feed is all you need. Once you get all of the data into an engine, we've also built automatic data configuration, feed configuration widgets to be able to make one for Alexa and Amazon, to make a different one for Apple and Siri, right? So that our process is to try to normalize what is a very one-to-many is what we do. And each one of those many platforms is really a different language. It's German and French and, you know, and Swahili.
You know, it's we've ended up in a funny place, haven't we, Steve? When you think about it before, if you could get on a pay TV system, then your channel would be findable in the guide. It might be in the bottom, but it was there. And if they had a search, the search would work. Now we're in a situation where anybody can put up an internet TV service, but it can't be found on the major connected TV platforms very easily at all, because they're just not integrated with that universal search.
Exactly. It's, you know, we talked about that before, about, you know, the open internet had a fast lane for the broadband provider and a slow lane, you know, for somebody else's app. We were worried about throttling the small players. And in this case, there's a fast lane for the large streaming services, but there's no lane to getting your data into the search engines for smaller players in many cases. So that there's no on-ramp even. And so I think that we have to find a way to make it simpler, but it's hard to ask the industry to come and conform to a uniform standard. It's not going to happen, because their search engines only read their own language.
Yeah.
Well, so we're left with people learning the processes. And so since we learned it early, we have a nice small business helping people get discovered. And I think it's the first thing that you should do in 2021, if you're trying to grow your audience and get the lowest cost subscriber acquisition, is try to get into every platform if you can.
Good advice. And if they want to do that, they can find more information at your website, which is universalsearch.io. And I'll include a link when I post this piece, Steve. Steve, thank you so much for spending time with us. Such an important topic, and probably something that people don't really realize the full implications and impact of.
Yeah, for sure. I think so, Colin. Also, my email is steve@universalsearch.io. And so use that as well. They can email me directly, because we're doing these pilot programs and creating the data for people so that they can see how it's the most effective marketing tool. So we'd love to hear from people.
Sounds great. Great. Steve, thank you for spending time with us.
All right. Thank you, Colin. Appreciate it.
This has been Colin Dixon with Endscreen Media.